This is the American Soccer News Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Midnight Ride. Again, it's Hank Alexand, your host for this evening's journey through the tale of woe that is the New England Revolution these days. Joining me tonight is Mr. Sean Donahue. Sean, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you doing, Hank?
I'm doing really well. I should mention that Sean is one of the co-founders of New England Soccer Today. He's been on the show many, many times. It's always a pleasure to have him back. Let's just get right into it. Last night, the Revolution hosted Philadelphia Union, the Eastern Conference leading Philadelphia Union, and a must-win game for the Revolution. And things just did not go right from the very beginning. So let's break it down. What, in your mind, was the chief problem for the Revolution?
I mean, they just got off to an awful, awful slow start. They looked horrible right from the opening whistle, but I think looking at the lineup, it was interesting choices by Steve Nichol. I mean, we saw Benny Failhaber on the left. He played there a little bit against Seattle and didn't look good at all. And now we saw him starting there, and again, you know, he's not a left midfielder. And then we had the center midfield pairing of Shar Joseph, of course, out. So we had Pat Phelan and Stephen McCarthy, and you know, that's never going to be something that's going to provide you with a lot of offense through the middle. So the Revs were trying to play, you know, mostly direct. Route one play with Lechick and Mansali up top, which, you know, should give them some credit. It was good to see them have two forwards out there for once.
Yep.
But again, they rarely got the ball because no one in the midfield could pass it to them. It was just a too weak of a lineup to be successful, and they came out extremely flat-footed, and you know, the passion seemed to be missing in this game.
Yeah, I have to agree. It was pretty flat right from the get-go, and you know, I think we're agreed on the same point. The lineup was just not there, and you know, more importantly, you know, when you don't have a strong midfield, it's going to put pressure on your back four. Now Steve Nichol obviously must have seen what he liked against Manchester United, which the Revolution, you know, we should have mentioned that the Revolution did play the English Premier League champions on Wednesday night. And first half held them to a scoreless draw, and the back line of Kevin Alston, Franco Correa, AJ Soares, and Chris Tierney did pretty well against the English champions. But you know, that lineup is, you know, maybe they were just feeling flat as well, and they were missing their men early on in that game. And you have to wonder if it's the pressure coming in on them, no, and maybe a lack of communication without Shari Joseph there. But you know what kind of defensive breakdown, you know, allows those two goals, basically carbon copies of each other?
That's a good question. Now, after the game, you mentioned communication. Matt Reese, that was a big thing we talked about. A lot of them, Nichol talks about communication, but again, for, I'd like to see more communication out of Matt Reese, for one of them. Shari Joseph, leader back, enough of that for him at the game this morning. But I think there was a lack of communication between Soares and Correa. They haven't played together too much recently. Correa's been benched in favor of Cochran. I think that probably played a little bit of a role. I mean, they did look good against Manchester United, you know, in the same situation. But it was just a lack of communication and a lack of guys, you know, closing down their man. Justin Mapp had way too much space to get that cross in the first chance, and Kevin Alston didn't close his man on the header, and then wide open was Carlos Ruiz to tap it in, and then the same type of thing on the second goal. There was too many breakdowns. The guy's not closing their guys fast enough, and you know, other players not tracking the runs of the guys they're covering. Just all around led to some very easy goals for the Union. It looked horrible, and as Steve Nichol called it, schoolboy stuff with, you know, the defending there. So horrible breakdowns on defense, and something that we're not used to seeing this year, because the defense of the Revs has been generally solid. At the same time, Philadelphia, you know, hasn't scored a lot of goals this year either. They've made two teams look bad defensively. It's been the Revs and Toronto, so not in good company there.
No, definitely not. And, you know, it's funny. We were talking a little bit about the lineups before the game up in the press box. We were, you know, going over things and saying, you know, Chris Tierney is going to be – actually, it might have been over Twitter or something like that, but Chris Tierney is going to be the – you know, was going to be the left back of choice for a while, in my opinion, after his performance against Manchester United. And somebody made a comment, I can't remember who it was, but somebody made a comment saying, well, you know, there's going to be some speedy right-sided midfielders.
That would be me.
Oh, that was you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and that's true. And then you bring in a guy like Justin Mapp, who does have some speed and some skill. He's a veteran of this league. He's been playing here for a long time. And, you know, I'm used to seeing him more attack on the left, but he can't play either side, I should say. And, you know, he definitely took advantage of Chris Tierney in that lineup last night and then was able to burn both Tierney and Soares to set up that first goal. And, you know, that's just poor marking or poor positioning or just, you know, all-around poor defense, not something we're used to seeing, as you said. And then, you know, first half being what it was, obviously pathetic from a Revolution production standpoint. And they did the right thing by Steve Nichol did the right thing by moving to the 3-5-2 in the second half. So, you know, how do you think that worked out for them?
I mean, we only saw it for a very short period of time before the red card, unfortunately. But in that short period of time, it looked very good. The Revs created two or three chances. Chris Tierney hit off the post. It was a lot better than the first half where they had zero shots and less than 37% of the possession. They definitely had a lot more possession in that period. They had a lot more chances. Now, it looked good. Something that I'd like to see for a longer period of time. I don't think we're going to see it on Wednesday because I think if they're going to play a 3-5-2, then having Phil Hopper as the attacking mid of that center three-man center midfield is crucial to it, and they're not going to have him Wednesday, so I don't think we're going to see it then, but it is something that, you know, based on that brief 20-minute period of time, I would like to see more. It definitely changed the game completely and kind of swung it into the Revs' favor until that red card.
Right. Well, we might see a 3-5-2 if you put Shaoui in the middle and back him up with Joseph and McCarthy. I mean, with Phelan and McCarthy.
You might see it, but I don't think that would be effective.
I don't think that'll be effective at all. And
I think based on the personnel they're going to have, I would expect them to go with a 4-4-2 with Joseph and Phelan in the middle. And,
yeah.
You know, built from there, it could be a couple of options in the left and a couple of options up top.
Yeah, and Joseph and Phelan will be platooning against Dwayne DeRosario for D.C. United. But before we get into D.C., let's go back to the Revs game because, you know, we should also mention that in the first half, it was a pretty strange scenario going on, and obviously most of the listeners of this podcast will have known about it already because of the fan base that this podcast does have is primarily diehard Rev supporters, and they were all probably in the fort when it happened, so we should give them some acknowledgement for their silent protest. You know, did a great job cheering on the boys as they came onto the field, and then boy, it was quiet in there. The only noise really coming from the Sons of Ben that were right in front of the press box last night. You know, do you think that, you know, and I was talking with some other people about this earlier. Do you think that had, do you think it sent the message clearly enough to the front office? And do you think it had any impact to the players on the field?
It's hard to say whether it's what message is sent to the front office until we actually see what their actions are in response to it. So I won't act. Not going to cover too much on that one because that's a tough one to call there. Cause only the future will tell us what if any impact it had there. But as far as the players, I would have thought it would have had an impact on them. Certainly was so silent. I did ask Kevin Allston about it after the game. He didn't act like it had much of an impact on them or that he even really noticed it so much, which was kind of surprising to me because I certainly noticed it up in the press box how silent that game was. But otherwise, you would think, especially a guy like Matt Reese would have taking notice. I didn't get a chance to ask him about it, but I was surprised to hear that Alston didn't seem to notice it too much.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a few songs, obviously, that, you know, Matt Reese would be familiar with. Obviously, we all dream of a team of Matt Reese, something that we generally hear, especially when he's standing down in front of the fort, which he did in the second half. But, you know, for me, like you said, it's going to be hard to tell, you know, what the impact was to the front office. But, you know, I'm wondering if there was some rumblings throughout the locker room. And we'll get into talking a little bit about, you know, the state of the locker room a little bit later. But, you know, as the team did come out flat, I'm wondering if they knew something was going to go on and if they were just kind of preoccupied with other stuff. Because they came out so unbelievably flat and did not look like they had any drive whatsoever. And most noticeably for me was Benny Failhaber, who just seemed to lounge around the field for parts of the game until he was moved into the middle. But I do think that some of the players must have noticed and it must have, you know, maybe raised some eyebrows. And even Shari Joseph said on Twitter, "So I don't understand why they would walk out on the team." And you know, the response from the Midnight Riders and the Rebellion and Rev Army is, you know, we didn't walk out on the team. We're protesting against the way the front office is teaching us is treating us. So credit to them for doing it. It would have been easy for them to ignore it and just sit there and do their normal thing. But, you know, they got organized and they pulled it off. And it was very noticeable when they left the stadium. They had a big, loud procession as they left. And I think a lot of people noticed. So, you know, credit to them. But back to the team on the field and the second half, we saw – you know, Benny loses cool a little bit. And I think I made a comment earlier in the game after he picked up the first yellow card that he was looking to get thrown out. It just looked like he had that kind of edge on his game that night. He was making reckless challenges. He was his attitude, you know, it's just his whole body language doesn't seem to be one of a positive nature. Shall we say, but, at that stage, you know, what can the Revs do? I mean, like they're already down in the hole 2-0. There's not a lot left for them to do. Is there anything that any substitution maybe that Steve Nichol could have done differently in that game to, maybe get an out, you know, even keep it at 2-0 or...
I think they could have kept it at 2-0 if they tried to pack it in, but I think they did the right attitude. They didn't put an extra defender on and they kept trying to attack. They obviously didn't have much success at all, but I think that situation was what Failhaber did, getting himself out of it. You know, put the Revs in a situation, a no-win situation at that point. They were not going to come back from the two-goal deficit then. They were looking positive until that happened, but that kind of just ended all chances. So it was interesting thing after the match and during the match, Foreman calling out Failhaber on Twitter about his leadership. That was a very interesting thing, but it was a good point too, because you know, Failhaber throughout that match, and I think we've seen a lot of it recently, has let his frustrations get the best of him and has let that take him out of his game. This game, it got him ejected from the game even. Mm-hmm. He had a few challenges earlier that I thought could have warranted a yellow card too, right at the beginning. So he could have had a second yellow card even before he had that one. It's disappointing to see from a guy of his quality, you know, that he's getting so frustrated and not focusing on the game, but taking out his frustrations and reckless challenges like that, and getting himself ejected and really hurting the team. He's one of the highest paid guys on the team, and they need him out there on the field, not getting himself thrown out, and now they're not going to have him Wednesday either.
Right, so let's move on to Wednesday, because that's obviously, you know, on paper, you know, DC United... You know, it's now obviously a much more dangerous team with the additions of Duane DiRosario and Brandon McDonald, you know, strengthening that back line. A few months ago, you know, back in, we would have said this was a game that the Revs could have won or should win. But now, you know, what do you think? What are the chances here for the Revs?
I think you're at the point now where you look at the Revs and the only game they should win is maybe against Toronto, and they're not playing Toronto again anytime soon. So, looking at any game, it's not there's no games out there that you see the Revs should win at this point in the schedule. So going into DC, it's going to be tough. DC Philadelphia hasn't been that great, despite their good players. They're still a 500 team at home. They are on a little bit of an unbeaten run, but mostly ties and not wins. So it's a team that's beatable. It's a question of whether or not the Revs have the quality to beat them, and right now it doesn't look like they do. They really need to figure something out, because it was interesting, too, after the game on Sunday, talking to the players, you know, Chris Tierney and Kevin Austin both said, you know, we didn't have a game plan out there. We came out there,
and that's,
it like we didn't know what we're doing, and that's, you know, awful. 19 games in the season to hear these guys saying that. Like, Chris Tierney's direct quote was, we just weren't ready to play. I think we didn't really have a game plan. We weren't sure what we were doing. We weren't on the same page. We couldn't connect. We weren't fighting. And that's the biggest thing. You know, to hear a guy like Chris Tierney, who's been on this team for several years now, come out and say that after the match, yeah, this doesn't give you much hope going forward when 19 games in, they're talking about not having a game plan.
Yeah, and we're gonna hold on to that thought after the break, because that's a very important point. You look at, you know, the state of this locker room and the state of the whole organization. There's a lot of problems wrong. And when we come back, we'll take a quick break, come right back. We'll talk about what's going on in the Revolution locker room and see if we can figure out any kind of possible solution. So stick around. We'll be right back. Fall River Football. Be very, very excited. All right, we're back. Hank Alexander again with Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. And Sean, also I should say part-time writer for ESPN when Brian O'Connell is not around. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Occasion.
On occasion, filling in on ESPN. Awesome. So we were just about to talk about the state of the locker room, some really telling comments from Chris Tierney and other players in the locker room, and they really just kind of speak volumes about the mindset of this franchise, or I shouldn't say the franchise, I should say the players, because like you said, 19 games into the season and they don't have any confidence in the game plan. That, you know, is, do you attribute that to just the absence of Shawry Joseph, or has Steve Nichol lost the locker room?
I mean, it's a tough call, because you go and losing Shawry Joseph is obviously a huge loss, but they've been without him before.
Mm-hmm.
Not like a situation where they've never played without Shawry Joseph before. They've had several times this season where he's been out suspended or carrying a minor knock and hasn't played. So it's hard to say what's going on, because, I mean, Nichol's been here for 10 years, so it's hard to see him losing the team quickly or in this situation. But those comments, and hearing Kevin Austin say basically the same thing, and then hearing Matt Reese say we're all on different pages, we're not doing the same, we have to get on the same page, and we have guys doing a bunch of different things. Now, again, 19 games into the season, and you're not on the same page. It's hard to really find an excuse for that, even without the captain on the field.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm inclined to say that, you know, there's something formulaically wrong here, and you know, it's maybe time for, you know, not just some new faces on the playing staff, but get some new some new coaches in, and maybe start at the top and work your way down from Mike Burns, and and then if they can bring in a new technical director or a new GM kind of role, somebody who really knows the league and manages the league accordingly, somebody that's got a lot of experience. I mean, do we want, like, Mike Burns has got the experience in the league and working with the contracts and stuff, but he hasn't been able to bring anybody in either. And you wonder if that's him not being able to manage up Bob Kraft and Jonathan Kraft, or if it's just, you know, that the Revolution have such a bad reputation now that nobody wants to play here. But either way, it's been frustrating from a fan perspective because, you know, we keep hearing the same thing out of Steve Nichols' mouth. Like, oh, yeah, we had a player. We thought we had him. We made him an offer, and he signed somewhere else. I said, okay, we've heard this song and dance before. It's and I'm coming off very negative, and I don't necessarily
want to. I think it's hard not to be in the current state of affairs.
Right. I don't necessarily want to be negative here, but, you know, it is the same song and dance. And, you know, it's you have to wonder if the Revolution if Steve Nichols lost the locker room, is he going to be in a position to get it back? And I think this week, you know, with a game that's a you know, you could win on the road in D.C. You could, theoretically, if the team gets up enough for it. And
yeah, D.C.'s been a very interesting team, but it's definitely a beatable team. The Revs can actually return to some semblance of form, which they didn't have on Sunday.
Right. And then, you know, if you can get a win in D.C. and then have that kind of maybe get some confidence back before you go into Colorado and maybe eke out a draw in Colorado. And I'm not going to make any promises there because we can talk about Colorado. But if they can do that, and then their next game is against Kansas City on the 30th in Kansas City. So it's three road games in a row. You know, if they can start to build up a little confidence here and then maybe bring in a new player, you know, before the transfer window ends, you know, that would be great. I think to help build this team up and get them going in the right direction. But, you know, if they don't come out with at least a point in DC and or a point in Colorado, you know, what is left for the Revolution for this season? They can even lose out and get the first draft pick because Montreal's coming into the league next year and they automatically get the first draft pick. So, you know, I don't even know if there's some.
Well, if you get more successful with the second draft pick back in 2002 than having the first one, so that worked out.
That did work out. Absolutely.
You never know. The first draft picks in MLS haven't always lived up to the billing. As a matter of fact, more times than not, I'd say they haven't. But regardless. If they lose the next two games, then you really got to start thinking about starting giving some of the younger guys more time, maybe, you know, get into it. Maybe give Fagundes some time out there to get some experience. But if they don't get some points in these next two games, making the playoffs is all but impossible at that point. This isn't a deep enough squad to go on one of those runs that we saw them do back in 2002 or back in, you know, those seasons where they went on the late season runs into the playoffs at the end. I don't think
2005.
Yeah. I don't think the team has the depth to do that, you know, even if they do pull it together. Because, I mean, the 2002 team, you know, wasn't that great of a team, better team than they have now, but it wasn't that great of a team, and they managed to, you know, do sound defending and sound tactics, pull out an impressive, you know, 7-game unbeaten run to end the season. But I don't see this team having the depth or the players right now to do that. So I think if they don't get something out of these next two games, then they do have to start considering, you know, maybe we should give a Ryan Kinney a chance and start looking towards the next season and seeing what guys they should keep, what guys they should get rid of. Because there's a lot of guys that haven't seen any playing time. And, you know, I'm sure that's for a reason that they haven't shown enough to get it, but it would still be good to get some of these guys time, you know, if that's the situation, and see if there are who should stick around and who needs to go.
Yep. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, you know, there's got to be some accountability here from not just from the front office, Mike Burns, but there's also got to be some accountability from Steve Nichols. And, you know, if Steve Nichols comes out and says, you know, we play like a bunch of schoolboys, and we haven't been able to master the basics all year. And I said, well, you know, Steve, I'm sorry. You know, it's your job as the coach to figure out what's wrong and help fix it. And, you know, we're already halfway through the season now. And if you can't, if you don't know how to fix it, then, you know, what's going on? is there a point where the Revolution, and it's hard for me to say this because Steve Nichols has done so much for the organization, but at what point did the Revolution let go of Steve Nichols?
Again, like you said, it's hard to say because of how much he has done for the team. He's the first coach that's gotten any sort of success, but at these last 3 years, undeniably, there's been a steady regression in their play and their form. It's hard to say who to blame. Obviously, the talent level's gone down. Is that Steve Nichols' fault? Is that Mike Burns' fault? Is that both of their fault? The signings that have come over the past 2 years, which I'm sure I'll talk about a little bit later with the news of the past 2 weeks on that end, and who's left. Obviously, that hasn't worked out well at all. It's been pretty much a disaster over the past 2 years with how those signings have worked out. And again, guys like Castro leaving and Parrish leaving on not so great terms, and the Reynolds was leaving on not so great terms, and speaking out in the media about it. That's not going to make it any easier to bring in other players after those guys and their experiences have talked about it. That's not going to help anything. No. So it's kind of a downward spiral with, at the moment, no real end in sight. And when you see that happening, well, you do have to start thinking about making changes. At what point you go ahead and actually execute those changes? Another question.
Right. It's hard to say.
Some might say it's already should have been happened already, but
right.
It's tough.
And it's too hard to say now, too, because, who are you going to bring in?
Yeah, that's the key problem there.
Who's going to?
If you do get rid of Nichols, who you replace him with? They haven't had any success with any other coach in the past.
Right. And the only person I know that could maybe, and this is a very controversial thing, and I've said this to people on the side, but the only person I know that has any kind of GM experience out there that isn't a GM right now that has a previous relationship with the Crafts is Alexi Lalas. And, what he did with New York and with L.A., and was he with some other club somewhere as a GM? Maybe Toronto. I don't know. But anyway, not too successful as a GM. Obviously,
also president and general manager of San Jose Earthquake.
Right, San Jose. Yeah. But so the overall experience there, San Jose moved to Houston, right?
Yeah.
And then he took over at New York. New York got. Was bought out by Red Bull, and Alexi went to L.A. L.A. brought in Beckham, and that was the end of Alexi. And, but there's no doubt that, he's a bigger name, maybe a bigger personality, maybe has some better contacts. Maybe he's a guy that the Revolution can, bring in as a kind of a technical director role or something along those lines to work alongside Mike Burns and Steve Nichols to help get them, the personnel that they need or want. Because obviously they're having difficulty signing the people they want. If they keep signing it, say at the last minute they change their minds, there's something going on which is forcing them to back out. Now, I don't know what that is, and I don't think anybody really knows what it is. Otherwise, they'd fix it. But let's talk a little bit about the roster moves that have happened. Let's go back. Obviously, at the end of June, they let go both of their signings from last year. Ilya Stolica, who had been on loan with FC New York, and then and wasn't even playing down there, I might add. But
I don't know what the situation was there. He wasn't even making the bench.
Yep.
There's more to that. A little bit more of that, cause the same thing with Tim Murray. He wasn't playing either.
Right. I think they were just rounding out the training squad.
They played one game, the first game they were down there, and then didn't hear from him again. So.
Right. And then they also, just this past year, they signed French international left back Didier Domi. And then shortly thereafter, they signed French international central midfielder Ousmane Davo, and Domi was released last week, right after the Manchester United game. It was noticeable absence that he wasn't there, considering that he had just been taken off the injury list. And so they released Domi from his contract. That was not a retirement. That was a release. And then today, Usman Dabo, who played all of 25 minutes in the game against Manchester United before he got back on the injured list, announced his retirement. And I have to say, he did it in a very classy way. He paid his respects to the organization and said, you know, this team is it needs help and needs players that can play, and I'm not helping the team, and I'm going to just resign or retire. And, you know, he was eligible to, because of the guaranteed contract situation, he was eligible to, you know, take his salary for the rest of the year. He's reportedly declined that option, saying that he didn't want to, he wanted to earn his money, basically, is what he said in so many words. You know, credit to him for doing that. But at the same time, you know, let's go back to the roster picks and find out why they're bringing in guys that are, you know, aside from Marko Perović, their last, you know, four out of their last five international signings have been over the age of 30. And you have to wonder what the heck they're doing.
When we're bringing in guys who are in their mid-30s, a lot of them, like the Dabo, have a history of injuries. I think you're crazy to expect them to be healthy for a full season. As they go into the season, expect Dabo to be your regular starter at center midfield, but always, you know, very, very optimistic and didn't work out. You know, Domi showed some flashes when he did play, but you have to wonder if they're signing these guys because, you know, those are the only guys that can get to come here, or, you know, whether their scouting is not good enough. I mean, they did try to get, you know, a young guy and Michael Augustine, that didn't work out either. They got rid of him too, shortly into the season. So, you know, whether it's been youth or, you know, more experienced guys, they haven't had a lot of luck. So again, it's another situation where you look at the front office and ask if they need somebody up there that can be doing a better job scouting and finding these players. And, you know, we talked about how we haven't mentioned, I think, how Nickel that he sent out contract with two players over the weekend, and one of them signed for somebody else in the last minute. You know, they're gonna get him. Didn't really mention too much about what happened to the other one, whether that's still on the table. But again, you look at that, and that's another situation. Now, they're in a situation where they desperately need guys. Their roster's down to 25 players, and they sent out two contract offers. You know, they only find two potential guys. In a situation like this, you know, mid-summer transfer, there's obviously going to be big competition to sign players.
Right.
You guarantee that just sending out a contract is going to get you somebody. So, you know, just putting all your eggs on two players, if that's the case. You know, Nicholas just mentioned they went after two players this weekend. I don't know. There's more that he wasn't leading on to, but if it is just two players, then that's pretty risky to, you know, put it all into those two guys. And sure enough, one didn't sign and don't know what the deal is with the other one. But we hope they could find more than two guys to be going after at this point.
Right, and you got to think about that in terms of who they're trying to sign and what they're offering them. And this is stuff that we'll never be privy to. You know, we might find out who they're trying to sign, but we'll probably never find out what they're offering them. And you have to wonder if that's, again, goes back to the front office and even the ownership saying, you know, we don't want to pay more than X for a player of this caliber. But also, I mean, there was some other there was a reserve game today, and they brought in a guest player, I want to say. I don't want to call him a trialist because we don't know what the status is here, but he was a...
Usually the guys we see in the reserve games are just guest players.
Right. But there's a lot of buzz about is it Adam Howarth?
Yep.
Is that his name? And he had played with MLS back with the Red Bulls a while back and then gone to play in third division Finland. And Western Mass Pioneers, you know, so he's been around a bit. He's had some exposure to the league, some exposure to USL. Apparently, you know, a lot of people were chattering about him today on Twitter, and we just want to make clear that, A, he's a defender. Revolution don't need a defender right away.
Anywhere near the most pressing need anyway.
Exactly, and, you know, it's... He may have impressed in a reserve game, but, you know, more than likely this is a scenario where they just needed a warm body to help round out the roster, considering, you know, they've had a lot of injuries lately, and they've got a game on Wednesday night They want to save some people for that as well, so they don't necessarily want to burn through their first choice and their second choice defenders in a game where, you know, give that guy three games in 1 week. That might be tough. So let's just kind of put a quash in that rumor right now. I don't think it's
yeah, and another thing too is that he's 28 now.
Yeah,
or 27 and never really latched on a team. Kind of been a journeyman playing in not very good teams at all.
Right.
Most of the time with the Red Bulls, he's time with the reserves, so he's not. That's not your savior by any stretch. I mean,
right.
You're at 25 players in your roster. You need your 27, 28th guy to fill it out, just to have a warm body there, and that might be who it is. But I don't think he's going to be any. I don't think they're going to sign him first of all. I don't think they're probably.
No. Well, you never know. But
you do never know. But if they do, I can't see him being anything more than a reserve team player for now.
For the rest of the season.
And when you're going after reserve team players, or, you know, guys for the future, you generally don't want him to be 27 or 28 years old. You're looking for a little bit younger than that. So I don't think, you know, he's a very interesting story, certainly, with where he's played and been all over the place and going to URI. But other than that, I don't think he's going to be, you know, much of any help for the refs at this point.
Right. And I actually put a call out to a friend of mine who's a diehard New York Red Bulls fan, and he thought he was a goalkeeper. So, I mean, if the diehard New York Red Bulls fan thought he was a goalkeeper, you know.
Well, he has 6'4", so you
bet. Yeah, maybe he's our fourth string keeper. Who knows? But anyway, let's kind of bring this to a close here, because we've been rambling on about prospective players. You know, obviously the Revolution need help. And whether or not they're going to get it this season remains to be seen. They've got, I think right now, one of the most pressing needs for them is to have an attacking midfielder type presence, somebody that can play with Benny and Shalri. Maybe it's not necessarily a wide player, but that certainly wouldn't hurt.
I think that is a big need.
Yeah.
Don't have anyone there that can consistently get good service in the box. Look at the game Yossi had on Sunday. That was one of his worst games in a Revolution uniform, where he didn't have a single successful cross in the box. Passing percentage was south of 50. The only player on the field with a south of 50 passing percentage. And I turned the ball over 7 times, getting tackled, not on passes. So that was not pretty. And now that you have Chris Tierney playing left back, in the first half, well, he's your one guy that has been fairly consistent in getting service in the box. You know, again, he doesn't have the pace really to beat a guy one-on-one, but at least his crosses have been good. But when you have a left back, you don't see that even much.
No.
So I think, you know, getting rid of Domi and getting rid of Novak earlier in the year really, you know, ties your hands as far as who's playing left back. You got Darius Barnes, who hasn't looked really comfortable there, and you got Tierney, who can play there, but again, not ideal. And then you're weakening your left midfield spot because.
Right.
Again, I think if they get someone consistent, I think that's one of the biggest areas that Miss Rawson, you know, left, is having nobody that can consistently get good service in the box. You have a guy like Lechick, who you think is a target man as far as using his head and getting those shots on frame, on headers. You have no one that can serve the ball into him. So that's certainly an issue, and he didn't really have any chance to speak of Sunday, which is another wearing issue there as well.
Right. Well, our leading assist man right now is Benny Failhaber, and he's got 3 assists. He's been he was on the shelf for the better part of a month with a sprained ankle, and he's going to be missing Wednesday night's game. So, you know, where is this stuff going to come from? I don't know. Maybe you put a guy like Zach Boggs in the middle, in a 3-5-2 situation, as a withdrawn forward in a 4-4-2. As much as I like Kenny Mansali and his motor, I think he had a really good header on that just missed on Sunday night. But, you know, we need more of that from him on a consistent basis. I think he's better served as a substitute. So let's find a partner for Rajko Lekić that can consistently chase down those loose balls and add some service in there from the forward position, you know, a defending forward like Adam Christman, you know.
I think Shulowski has potential to be be that guy. And I think
Yeah. Seeing
it in spurts when he's coming out of the late sub. But he hasn't had a chance in a long time to start a game.
Yeah, I think I think he really needs to start this next game. But we'll see what happens on Wednesday night. And
like, when you start him, you got Mansali, who's quite the threat off the bench with the speed. And, I've always said Mansali and Yossi, to me, are two players that would be great to be able to have on the bench to come off and use their speed to burn guys and really have that advantage over the tired leg. Or if you're starting them, I think they don't have the skill to be – they're not consistent enough to be starters in this league. But when you have them on the bench, they look a lot better because of that pace. So if you could find Ryan Guy and get him on the right, if that works. I haven't seen enough of him to say that, but you had Ryan Guy and Chris Tierney on the wing, then still by no means an ideal solution. But if you have those guys coming in off the bench to replace them late in the game, I think that kind of changes that dynamics of the team completely and would certainly help.
Right. I agree. Well, let's take a break there, and we'll come back. We'll get our predictions for next week's this two upcoming games. And so hang tight. We'll be right back. Magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight. All right, we're back, wrapping up another episode of The Midnight Ride. Hank Alexander again with Sean Donahue. And Sean, let's get some predictions before we call it a night here. What do you say going into D.C. and then Colorado this week for the Revolution?
Well, I actually see the Revs playing a lot better against D.C. than they did on Sunday, which isn't saying much, but I think they're going to do better with Benny Failhaber out of the lineup. I think they've been trying – Nichols has been trying too hard to find a position for Failhaber in the lineup, but he hasn't found one yet. But without him, they're going to be able to play guys where they belong on the field. I think they're going to do a lot better. I expect them to go to a 4-4-2. Zach Strzelowski scored a good goal against D.C. last time the Revs played D.C., so maybe we'll see him. And I can see the Revs sneaking out of this one with a 2-1 win. Or hard to be too positive with what we've seen lately, but I kind of, for once, I actually have a little bit more of a positive thing about this game than I have in the past. Sneaking out of there with a lucky win or a draw. I think DC is a very inconsistent team this year. I'm still not sold that they're a playoff team by any stretch. So I think if the Revs can get their act together, and it's also kind of a trap game for DC, I'm sure they're looking at the Revs as a team they should beat. But I think this is definitely a game that if the Revs do get the tactics right, they could come out of here with a victory, and I think that they might just do it.
Right. And, I'm inclined to agree. I think it could be if any game is a must-win game, this is it. Because I think at this stage, if you can't win against DC United, it's going to kill their confidence. Yeah, so I'm going to say it's a 1-0 win for the Revolution. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It's going to be a tight one. I think Dwayne De Rosario is a threat, and you're going to see Pat Phelan and Shari Joseph, like I said earlier, platoon against him. They've got Andy Nahar, very fast, very speedy. Chris Pontius is also a threat. They've got a lot of pieces that can hurt the Revolution. So it's going to take a top-notch game from the back line to keep guys like Andy Nahar from, getting that service that that he can get, or even going one-on-one against the defenders. So look for AJ Soares to have a big game against Andy Nahar. And then you're going to have to see guys like I'm assuming it's going to be Ryan Cochran, although I think I prefer Franco Correa, but these guys are going to have to keep Chris Pontius off the sheet as well. So I'm not too sure who the starting lineup will be for DC, but it's going to be any way you slice it, the Revolution are going to have one of the best performances of the season and sneak away with 3 points if they're going to make the playoffs. But let's go ahead and we didn't talk too much about Colorado, but they've obviously got some offensive weapons with Connor Casey and Omar Cummings. And Jeff Larenowitz has been scoring quite a few goals this season. What do you see happening there?
That's a very, very hard one to call. I mean, first of all, I think a big part of it will be how the Revs do in D.C. If they can get a win and get confidence there, I think that kind of changes how you look at the Colorado game. But this is definitely a Colorado team that's hard to predict. They're a 500 team right now. They haven't been that good on the road. They haven't been that good at home. They've tied a lot of games. We're used to seeing Colorado as a team that's almost unbeatable at home. Certainly for the Revs when they go into Denver.
Absolutely.
They don't have any luck whatsoever. You know, I as inconsistent as Colorado's been right now, I have trouble seeing the Revs getting a victory out of that one. Like you said, you know, if they can get a draw, that would be a good result for the Revs, as much as they need 3 points from every game, really, at this point, you know, going forward. But I think that's a tough one for them to come out of. And Colorado is starting, it seems like they're starting to change things. Well, it did seem like they were starting to change things until they lost 4-3 to Seattle. Had a little bit of a run going. But I think a lot of that game depends on what happens on Wednesday. Colorado's playing New York at home. The Revs are playing in D.C. If Colorado comes away from New York with a victory and the Revs lose to D.C., then I think the momentum's clearly on Colorado's side. I see them coming with a victory. But you know, if Colorado again, you know, if Red Bulls can put some more doubt in Colorado's mind by getting a victory away at Colorado's home stadium, Colorado reeling, and the Revs can build some confidence in D.C., then this is a game where there are some points up for grabs.
Right. And, you know, it's I believe, isn't Nyasi's brother in Colorado now?
Yeah, I think he was traded there.
Yep. So it could be Nyasi versus Nyasi, and which is always fun. But like you said, I mean, this is a game where the Revolution, you know, they can't afford to leave points on the table, like you said. But at that time, you know, even 1 point is leaving a point on the table. So I think if they can go into Dick's Sporting Goods Park, I was going to say Mile High Stadium, but that's not it. If they can go into Dick's and come away with a point, I think we'd have to be happy with that result. Now, bear in mind, if they go up 2-0 in the first half and get a 10-man get a man advantage, and then
exactly
blow it,
what I was thinking.
if they blow it, I'll still be very disappointed. But
in that case, point is not a good result.
Exactly, exactly. You have to change your expectations, and you have to change your game plan too. But hey, Sean, I want to thank you for coming out tonight. It was great having you back on the show. I definitely want to get you back on in the future weeks as we continue our roller coaster ride with the Revolution. Seems to be on a
hopefully a few ups before the next time.
Yeah, hopefully a few ups. Hopefully a few ups. So, Sean, give us your byline, your sports URL, your whatever you're working on these days.
Still anysoccertoday.com, which is any as in New England. You can also type in newenglandsoccertoday.com, and I'll take you there too. But like we were talking about, the lack of a game plan that the few players were talking about. Before I came on here, I had been working on a 800-word article that's pretty much done that I'll be posting up there in a few minutes after we're done with this podcast. So when you listen to this show on recording, you can check that out. I'll be up there. We've actually gotten a ton of hits on the site over the past couple of days. Record hits for the past 2 days, so that's been exciting. We have some plans going forward in the future that hopefully I'll know more about in the next couple of weeks that I can announce. But we do have plans to expand our coverage for any soccer today, and we want to do more Breakers coverage now too, especially with all the hype from the Women's World Cup. So definitely, if you're into soccer in New England, you got to check it out.
Excellent stuff, and. So, yeah, I want to thank you for coming on. And if that's anysoccertoday.com and also on Twitter, right? Twitter is at anysoccertoday, right?
Facebook as well.
There you go, Facebook as well. And for this show, you can email us at revsmidnightride@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at TMR Podcast. And the blog where you can hear the shows and occasionally read pieces of varying nature is revsmidnightride.blogspot.com. So for Sean, this is Hank Alexand signing off. Thanks again for listening to Midnight Ride, and we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks again. Cheers. Bebete, vambora, pois já está na hora.